Accession number 10494, rule 3.
Mrs. Page, rule 3.
Yes, I joined the Arbeitsdienst, which is the organization which was originally founded in the 1920s to employ unemployed men. They were sent to East Prussia and to these areas to help farming there, mainly digging trenches or this sort of thing. But Hitler developed it into a very much more politically orientated organization. And every young person of 18, male or female, either immediately after school or if they had left school earlier, later, had to join this organization for 6 months. They were in country areas, and we had to go out during the day to help small farmers or bigger farmers, whoever needed help in their on their farm or small holding, because they had lost their workforce through the army. We stayed there for 6 months, usually, and then had another 6 months in either an ammunition factory or on the trams or railways. I never got that far because I had to leave the camp before I was actually discharged to join the Air Force. Shall I say more about the organization, which it was very highly politically orientated. We had every morning before we actually went out to our work, we left about 10 o'clock. After breakfast, we had a lecture on some so-called historical lecture or political lecture, and which was so blatantly influenced by the Nazi ideology, one really couldn't get fooled by what was happening there. And then we went off to our work, came back in the afternoon, and in the evening very often we had a little talk again on the aspect of either our policies or the leaders of the organization, and we had to listen to the news every evening collectively and discuss it. And we were, as I say, we were a uniformed organization. And when I had to leave the camp, I still stayed in the same uniform, but was taken over with a whole group of other girls into the Air Force, into a, I don't know what that is called, a communication. There were communication, which was a company that led night fighters from the ground, because at night obviously they couldn't see what happening, and we had to plot their flight and the enemy fighters.
The enemy bombers?
Enemy bombers, yes. We plotted that from the ground. We had radar and various other equipment. But what else should I say about that?
You say you plotted it. So, I mean, can you describe exactly what your work involved?
Yes, there was a room where we listened to the our, as we called him, our fighter. And from what we heard, we could plot his situation. We listened to the enemy bombers. I don't know how it actually worked with our radio transmitters or radar equipment. So we could exactly find out on a large map where our fighter was and where the bomber, which he intended to attack, was too. And we could give him instructions how the bomber moved. But how that worked, technically, I really never understood. I just had a minor job listening to occasionally and turning a wheel and writing down certain positions. It was my job.
Did you have headphones on?
Headphones, oh yes, we had headphones on.
So what were you getting through the headphones?
We heard talking. We heard our fighter talk.
You mean you heard the pilot of the German fighter speaking to you?
Yes, that's right. And we turned a large aerial, and when we had the signal loudest, we stopped it and somebody else wrote down the position. I mean, this is vaguely how it was done. I took really very little interest in the technical matter.
But was the German pilot speaking to you just in German conversation?
No, he gave a certain code. I should have said that. There was a code which we understood, like, for instance, there are cows over the stable, which meant something. I mean, codes like that. Or
which meant something in terms of his position.
Is his position
and speed.
Yes, yes. And on occasions, this happened fairly frequently at night. I wasn't always very rarely involved in that actual night work. But once or twice, the fighter actually managed to shoot an enemy bomber down. I think that happened twice in the few months I was in that particular company. Otherwise, I considered the work I did rather senseless and useless and boring.
But through these headphones, how could you tell the position of the Allied bombers?
Yes, well, that I don't really remember. I can't say much about that. I really don't remember that, because I only did it a few times in that particular plotting room. I usually sat during the day on a little tower and just listened to any words that were said on the air in case there was some sort of action needed.
And you had a map in front of you?
At night, yes. They had a large table with a map in front of them.
How did
they... There was actually an action between the fighter and the bomber. But during the day, there was a map. And during daytime, just in case some action was required, we had to follow any spoken word on the air and follow it so that, I imagine, in case it was needed, we knew immediately where the position was. Adjust our aerial to the loudest possible signal we had. Stop there until something else turned up. We never had to use it. So that's why I found it completely useless and pointless, what I did there.
And this map was a horizontal map in front of everybody, was it, or a vertical one?
During the night plotting, it was a horizontal map. During the day, we had a map hanging on the wall opposite. It was only a small room during the day in which we sat and listened.
And the night map, the horizontal one, how were the positions of the planes shown up on this map?
They pushed little... I can't remember if it was a little cube on it.
So they were not shown electronically by lights?
No, definitely not.
And where was your German Air Force station where you
were? That was here near Emstetten in Westphalia.
How do you spell it? Emstett?
Emstetten. Emstetten. That was the nearest town, sort of small provincial town. We were in a small village called Saarbeck, Saarbeck.
And in this area, was the bombing situation any different from what you'd experienced at Wolfenbüttel?
Not at that time, not at the beginning. Not where we were immediately. We had very few bombings. But the Münsterland, which wasn't very far, experienced quite a bit of bombing. And we were fairly west. I mean, the western part of Germany really got bombed fairly badly. The further east you went, the less it was. Unless it was Berlin, of course. But we didn't experience very much bombings in that area. We hardly ever heard a bomb fall, I think. Then, later on, I didn't stay there all that long either, and then moved on to near Münster, eventually, where it was very heavy, the bombing, at that time, later.
Why did you move to Munster?
Yes, I didn't want to stay in the Air Force. I just absolutely hated it. And I had intended to go to university and study medicine, so I was really very reluctant to spend the rest of my life, rest of the war in the Air Force. And I asked if they needed any doctors in my organization. They said yes, they were very keen, they needed doctors. So I said I offered myself to become an Arbeitsdienst medical doctor. And eventually they took me out and sent me into a hospital to do some medical work, to give me a short course in nursing, which was actually 6 weeks, before sending me, as I said, to a university. After that I went back into a camp, like very similar to the one I had been before, started with, and there I waited a while, hoping to be sent to a university, which didn't happen because there was suddenly an edict by Dr. Goebbels that no woman was allowed to take up a university study, that all the university places were reserved for soldiers coming back from the front who had been injured and couldn't go back to the front. So they offered me to stay in the organization, which I did because I didn't really know what else to do. And I got a slight promotion, which I didn't really want, and became a type of medical orderly. I was responsible for the medical welfare of the girls in the camp in which I was. So I went into another camp for a few weeks and was eventually transferred again to the Air Force, namely to a searchlight company about 15 kilometers from Münster, which is a fairly large town in Westphalia. And there I stayed until March 45.
Why was it that you disliked the Air Force so much?
Well, I disliked being in a uniform by then, in that uniform I had been put in April 43. I liked the whole life in the military. I disliked it thoroughly. I disliked the restrictions. I wanted to do what I liked. I didn't really want to be in the army. I had never wanted to do that. And I found the work extremely boring and rather useless. And as I say, we still had our political lectures and so on. And I liked the restrictions of my freedom. We couldn't go out when we wanted, as it is in the army. We couldn't mix. We were great fuss, although we were with soldiers. There were a few soldiers, obviously. We weren't really allowed to mix with them, particularly, except on certain occasions when there were dances. Anyway, I was then keen to go to university and begin my medical studies.
So the work that you did with the searchlight in Munster area, how dangerous was that?
That could have been fairly dangerous, but they didn't work very often, fortunately, because we prayed, really, that they weren't put into action, because usually once a searchlight worked, I mean, of course it was liable to be bombed. I didn't do any work on the searchlights. I was the medical orderly, and were in the headquarters, from where I just had to visit all the various stations with searchlights, which were manned by girls, for whose health I was responsible. And if anybody was ever feeling ill, they called me, and I had to see what I could do with my limited knowledge.
What was the health of the girls generally like? Were they fit or run down?
Oh, they were extremely fit, fortunately. I didn't have much to do except take temperature or give an aspirin occasionally. No, we were very well fed, extremely well fed. I could even send bread home from that camp, that company. No, no, we were. And, I must say, that looking back, they were extremely healthy. It was the only time, I think, once or twice I had to take somebody into the military hospital.
Were the services getting better food than the civilians?
Oh, yes. Oh, considerably. We had plenty of food. I mean, it was a bit monotonous. Not an enormous amount of meat, but we had plenty of food. We were never hungry. Oh, yes, from that point of view, it was quite an advantage to be there. And on that, the headquarters were placed on a farm yard, a few wooden huts, and one hut had 12 Russian prisoners in it who worked during the day and didn't do much work, and they were locked up at night in that hut. They were well fed too, healthy chaps, there were the 12 of them. And we got a lot of bombing there. Actually, we had a hit on the farmyard once, and the farmer's son got killed. I wasn't there on that particular moment. I was outside in one of the searchlight stations, and the bombing really was fairly awful. I must admit, that was the first time I really got very scared. And a few times we had bombing by landmines. Why they bombed that area, which was mainly farming area, wasn't quite clear to us. And and another fairly horrible event was when a train was shot at by fighters, and I had to go and see if I could help, but it was really too late. The engine driver was dead by then. That happened occasionally. I was myself escaped by the skin of my teeth from a train that got bombed minutes after I'd left it. Once I saw a farmer being shot at by a fighter who was ploughing his field, and I was coming along on my bicycle, and I just managed to jump into the ditch. The fortune didn't hit the fighter, the farmer. Yes, eventually we heard at night the artillery fire of the front line. They had come really fairly close by the beginning of 45, and it was quite strong, the artillery fire at night. And we were warned that we would have to leave one of these days. In February we were told already, and were prepared that one day there would be coming a command that we had to pack our things and go eastwards, which happened eventually. The end of March, I think it was 45, we were told to take our bundles and be ready to walk, which we left. They left the 12 Russian prisoners, helped us pack our things onto a horse-drawn cart, waved goodbye to us, and we left. And we walked at night because it was safest, and rested during the day. And then eventually, the second or third day, we were in a small town, a Teutoburger Wald, and we already heard that our own troops were blowing up bridges to stop the march of the Allied forces. And I decided that was the end of the war for me. I was going home now, and one night when we heard terrible explosions, I thought I must get over the River Weser before they blow the bridges up. And with a friend we left, and took our bundles and joined many other people that were fleeing towards the east, soldiers and civilians, and got onto a lorry that took us to some small town where we spent the night, and next morning we waited for transport further east. And I got a military van appeared, and gave us a lift, and it turned out it went to even further than Brunswick. So I was back in my hometown within a few hours.
Was there any fear of going into an area which might be occupied by the Russians?
No, we did, and I knew I wouldn't go that far. The Russians hadn't got that far then. I mean, we had quite a few girls from East Prussia in our camp, and we knew they couldn't go home. I don't know where they intended to go to. I mean, I knew that my hometown was still quite a few miles away from the Russian troops, so I decided whatever would happen, it would be better to be at home than anywhere else. But that danger only came a little later, after the end of the war. We were then wondering if the Russians would take over that part of Germany where we lived.
What do you remember about Allied troops first coming into your area?
Well, the first troops were the Americans. They were the first occupant. And we were, I must say, we really were scared, very scared. I was scared, that's why I was running away, because the propaganda had been really so intensive, warning us what would happen to us, particularly girls, that we were scared. And the first we noticed of how that they were actually there was that they came into our house and to our flat. I remember sitting there, and the door opened, and an American soldier appeared with a gun over his shoulder, looked round the room, and they looked for radios and transmitters. They went in the roof. And then...
Did he find any?
No, not in our house. No, not transmitters. And then they eventually took over a few houses in our street, amongst them ours, and we had to leave within a few hours. We were taken, put up by other people in the street whose houses were not taken by the American troops. And we were incredibly scared to start with. No idea what could happen. That's an experience one hadn't had before. So on the whole, they behaved reasonably well, I think. I mean, I can't complain. They were fairly friendly with us. And eventually we talked to them even.
Did they misbehave in any way?
Not to us. No, not at all. Apart from the fact that they threw us out of our flat with very little notice, they did not misbehave to us personally. They didn't treat our flats and houses very well, that I must say.
What damage did they do?
Oh, they seemed to... Their way of cleaning the parquet floor seemed to be with hose or water, and they put rubbish into our larder, and it was generally dirty, and pinched a few books. My father's iron cross was stolen, and well, they left a lot of dirt with it.
So they were occupying your flats?
Yes, for several weeks, and they moved out.
Were your parents able to complain about the mess?
No. There was nobody there one could complain to who didn't think there was much point in it. They were quite kind, and they were nice with the children. They gave them chocolate and so on, and I must say we profited by it too. We stole from them whenever we could.
What did you manage to take?
Food. Tins of sardines and this sort of thing.
Were they careless with food?
Yes, they were extremely careless and extravagant. That annoyed the population. They burned food that was left over. People standing there, instead of giving it to them. That rather upset the population. I mean, the individual soldier, as I say, gave chocolate to an individual child, but I mean, whatever was left over was burned. And they didn't like us. I mean, my parents didn't like us to sort of get it too friendly with them. I mean, I didn't know what could happen. And the soldiers didn't like that very much. But eventually we did get friendly with the soldier. I mean, it was interesting for us to be able to speak English. And then the Americans left, and even before they left, British troops marched in two and occupied the top half of the street, which was interesting to watch because they obviously didn't like one another very much, which was interesting for us to see.
The American and British troops?
No, they didn't. They didn't talk much to one another. On one end, the American troops were sort of gathering on the top end of the very short road it was, were the British soldiers. And as I say, they didn't talk much at all with one another.
Was there any contrast in behaviour between the British and American troops?
I don't think so. No, I think that maybe the in behaviour towards us or generally. I mean, the American soldiers were much more easygoing with us and with themselves too. The way they guarded their things, they were sitting on chairs and had their helmets on the floor, and it was very much less discipline, we noticed. Much less. They were more easygoing with us, and generally, to start with at least. And we noticed the great difference between their provisions. But the British troops didn't have anywhere near as much food and chocolates and all these luxuries than the Americans.
Was there any misbehavior by British troops?
I didn't notice anything. We didn't experience anything, no. No, I mean, it depends what sort of misbehavior you mean, towards us women or...
Either that or else damage or stealing or...
No, no. Well, there was nothing to steal from us, really. No. No, I think they were much more disciplined than the American troops. And eventually the American troops left and we just had British troops there. Of course, they weren't allowed to fraternize with us.
But did they obey that or not?
They had a strict curfew. No, they didn't. Well, we didn't either. We had meetings with an occasional British soldier after curfew in the sort of fields behind our gardens. And I do remember I once met one too, and I looked around the potato fields, and I wasn't alone there. There were various other girls and various other British soldiers. We could do that because one couldn't see us there. It was a bit dangerous. I mean, after, I think, I can't remember when the curfew was, 9 o'clock, I think. But behind the houses in the fields, it seemed to be fairly harmless. So the soldiers didn't stick to it very strictly.